Welcome to our Saturday simulcast. It is the March 9th edition, and we want to thank our sponsor, the Union Club Hotel, the Boiler Up Bar, 811 Bistro. It may be spring break at Purdue this weekend, but I can guarantee you for the Purdue-Wisconsin game, it will be a packed house at the Union Club Hotel, a proud Marion Bomboy property, and one of the jewels of Purdue and all the beautiful renovation that they did 3 or 4 years ago. It's a terrific facility. Want to also remind folks that on this Saturday simulcast that you can subscribe to goldenblack.com. Go to our website. We actually write stories, have a great community. We appreciate your consideration. It's a great gift for any Purdue fan. If you like what you listen to and what you see on these Zoomcasts, you might consider subscribing and becoming part of our community. So today's show, a special one, they're all special, but Brian Newbert will join us and really break us down through Senior Day and all the, his recollections from the Purdue's four primary players, I should say, that we'll be talking about today. Of course, Carson Barrett and Chase Martin as well will be going through ceremonies too. And then Tammy McCall, the mom of Mason Gillis, will share with us her thoughts about not only Mason's career, the ups and downs of that, but also what it will be like for her and her family as they go through Senior Day on Sunday. And then Marley Thomas will join us in the third segment. Marley, of course, the game host and an interesting perspective on Purdue basketball, serving as the game host in Mackey Arena, and has done a great job doing that. And she'll share her insight in addition to her day job as a news anchor at the local CBS affiliate in West Lafayette, WLFI. So stay tuned, enjoy the show, and we'll appreciate you guys tuning in and watching and or listening. And also a reminder, which Brian always reminds me to say, and I never do, is you can subscribe to goldenblack.com. Or what a good idea, especially for all the coverage that Brian's going to bring in the NCAA tournament and the Big Ten tournament upcoming. But go to goldenblack.com and consider subscribing as well. Great time to do so. They'll join the thousands that have already done that. So Brian, I want to start, it's Senior Day coming up on Sunday against Wisconsin. Purdue's taken care of all the business it needs to in terms of the Big Ten race. But I think it'll be an interesting, what do you expect? I mean, Wisconsin's really been struggling in a lot of ways. It doesn't look like a game that Purdue's going to take its foot off the gas pedal at all. And a team that had beat up in Madison, though Wisconsin was sixth ranked when that game was played. But you look at the game Sunday, what do you expect to see from Purdue?
Well, yeah, wasn't it like 2 weeks ago that Purdue was two games behind Wisconsin in the Big Ten standings?
Yeah, it seems like it.
No, I expect Purdue to keep going all out to win. I don't think anybody wants to lose on Senior Day. You know, Purdue just ruined Illinois senior night, and I have a really hard time seeing Zach Edey lose his last game in Mackey Arena. I have a really hard time seeing Wisconsin beating Purdue, period. Purdue's been really consistent all season long. They've been really good all season long. They've been good at home. You know, they've been pushed a couple times, but really only a couple times. I just don't see Wisconsin having enough to be able to beat Purdue, let alone, or I should say, push Purdue, let alone beat Purdue. I think when you look at the game in Madison, that was a much higher stakes game for both teams, and Purdue really handled them in that game. I can't even remember what the final score was, but it was probably closer
6 points
than
at
reality.
The end, but yeah.
I think a lot of these Purdue wins this year have been like 6, 8 points, but they've been much more one-sided in reality than the final score actually reflected. The first Illinois game is a good example. That was only a 5-point margin, but that was essentially a double-digit win. The Wisconsin game at Wisconsin was the same way. The Michigan game at Michigan obviously was the same way. I thought the Michigan State game in Mackey Arena was the same way. But no, I think that, Purdue will come out charged up. I think it'll be important for Lance Jones to not, get too excited in his last game in Mackey Arena. I think, this will be a memorable farewell to a guy who might go down, and you might know better than me, the greatest player in pretty basketball history. Comparing eras is kind of silly and hard. Rick Mount didn't have a 3-point line. Glenn Robinson only played 2 years at Purdue, but like it. And I understand March is coming, or March is here, and the NCAA tournament's coming, but it's hard to really make an argument against Zach Edey as the greatest Purdue player of all time. I mean, it might not be head and shoulders above other guys, but it's hard to make a case against him for sure.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think it's interesting that you're right. I agree that comparing eras is next to impossible. Yes, Glenn. Yes, if he's and he will be the back-to-back National Player of the Year as well. I suppose Glenn Robinson could have been since he did win it in the year, and had he stayed another year. But yeah, if he gets Purdue where the Boilermakers want to be, I don't think there's any question that he is right there. One thing is interesting about him, and you look at his legacy. I guess it's time to look at some of those kinds of things. But just he's played the game the way he's supposed to play it, and that's close to the basket and using all of his physical tools to an advantage. Maybe that makes him less. Obviously Mount and Robinson shot jump shots and did other things as well, but. Again, you look at everything he's done and everything he has brought to this program from a standpoint of not only high visibility, but the fact that he's unselfish. He seems to be all about winning and nothing more. I mean, it's again pretty hard to put that into words. You're going to have to do that here in the next little bit of time. But his legacy is going to, especially in Mackey Arena now that we're looking at his last game. Is hard to it's really second to none.
Well, he's a much more multifaceted player than people give him credit for. Everybody
Exactly
perceives him
right.
as this battleship that just parks in front of the rim and just overpowers people and is just bigger than everyone. It's not reality. It's he's going to lead the Big Ten in scoring again. He's got my vote for Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year. Whether or not he gets it or not, I don't know, but I'm a firm believer that defensive rebounding is a big part of defense. He's the Big Ten's best rim protector. He has Purdue's offenses transformed this year, in part because they're using Edey more away from the basket. This is not your grandfather's Purdue offense here. This is they have completely changed what they do in terms of ball screen offense and things like that. Braden Smith has unlocked that. He's unlocked something else in Zach Edey. Edey has come a long way as a passer. I think where the game turned at Illinois the other night was when Illinois threw a bunch of help at Edey to start the second half, and they ran offense through him. Braden Smith makes a catch and shoot three. Fletcher Loader makes a catch and shoot three. Illinois was completely discombobulated the whole rest of the half on defense. For that reason, I think those passes and those shots completely changed the complexion of that game, and that is a reflection of the fact that Zach Edey can pass now. And I said before the season that I thought his scoring numbers might go down this year because his assist numbers would go up because Purdue would be a better shooting team. And I was, I guess, right on part of that. But his scoring numbers have gone nowhere but up because of what he's been able to do in pick and roll with Braden Smith. He's just a much more complete player, a much more multifaceted player than what people perceive a guy who's that big to be. And he's done everything right in his Purdue career. He's been and just an unbelievable player at Purdue, and a guy who's still getting better. And I think whatever comes next for him, somebody else is going to get the best of him. And that's a pretty bold statement because Purdue's gotten a pretty unbelievable 2 year run from him. And even before that, he was pretty good.
Yeah, I want to ask you too. We'll talk Smith and Lawyer here in a little bit, but just looking back and two guys in that senior class that you have watched for a very long time, Ethan Morton, before he got to Purdue, and of course Mason Gillis as well. I want to start with Ethan Morton because I thought it was interesting on Tuesday night. He gets 4 minutes on television, which you wouldn't have been able to, where you were seated, you weren't able to see the benches as much.
I was right
But
behind.
yeah, you're behind it, but I mean, you couldn't see him, couldn't see their faces coming off the bench to greet guys. I thought Ethan Morton did an interesting job of really working with not only Braden Smith, but I think also Cam Heidi in terms of just telling him what to do defensively. And here's a guy that kind of, in some ways, takes his position. Obviously, the job that Heidi
Yeah,
did
no question.
defensively and Damask was impressive. But talk about Ethan Morton. I mean, here's a guy that pretty selfless, it seems. I know he's a competitor and wanted to play a little bit more than he did this year, but he still has a big role in this basketball team. But just talk about the way his career has developed and what his legacy will be in your view at Purdue.
Yeah, just a great program guy. I mean, he's obviously sacrificed quite a bit. I think that's part of what has made this team work. You have three guys, Morton and Mason Gillis are seniors. Caleb First is not, but he's another guy. Those guys started a lot of games for Purdue, helped Purdue win a lot of games. And, you know, theoretically, your final year should be your best years, your biggest opportunities. And all of those guys have had to accept something less than what they might have earned prior in their career. And they've been all about winning, as you know, is becoming kind of the cliche around this whole season. And I think they all deserve immense credit for that. This doesn't work the way it's worked if one of those guys or two of those guys sitting there on the bench complaining about their playing time or not getting enough shots, you know, things like that. And I think Ethan Morton is as self-aware a player as I think I've ever covered, to the point where sometimes I think he's not as confident in himself as he could be, because he understands his own limitations maybe as much, if not more, than he understands his own strengths. I don't know if that makes any sense or not,
Yeah, it does.
I think he's had an eventful career at Purdue. His freshman season was a wash, remember? And that set him back. I think his sophomore year was absolutely tremendous. He was a huge part of that team's success. He was one of the great kind of as needed players. You could put him in there to do whatever you needed to do at any given point in time. He would make open shots. And I think that whole season he understood that he had kind of captured lightning in a bottle with his shooting that year. And it might not be permanent. And, you know, since then he's not shot the ball so well, but his value was never defined by shooting. I mean, that was part of his value as a sophomore, a big part, but he was never a shooter per se. I think his decision-making, his passing, his just understanding of a role, his defensive impact, his defensive versatility, his malleability, things like that in terms of what was needed on any given night in any given game, I think we're a big part of this. He's been a great teammate. He's been a great thinker of the game. He's really put the team ahead of himself. And I think that's a pretty high compliment for him. But no, I think he's always tried to help the people around him, even as they're more or less replacing him. In the case of Camden Heidi, I think Heidi's becoming that sort of multi-tool defender who can guard a lot of people. Very similar situation to what Morton did as a sophomore. And to your point about Morton helping Heidi, that's, you know, that's what makes this work. Having guys like that on your team, that's what makes this whole thing work. That's chemistry, that's selflessness. And when that's coming from a senior, that should filter down to everybody else on the roster.
It has, I think, and from that standpoint. And again, who knows, in the remaining games for Purdue this year, they could still play as many as 10 games, amazingly. And my guess is he'll have a role defensively, especially as Purdue tries to make its way deep into March and April. All right, Mason Gillis, I want to start, you know, with him. And another A similar story to Morton. Obviously, Gillis has played a bigger role this year, and there's been really the six starters you've talked about many times, and maybe win sixth man of the year, should win it as well, and hit big shots Tuesday night against Illinois, as he has been doing all really out pretty much his entire career, but certainly all year. But talk about just where you when you first saw Mason Gillis play, and what and did you get what you expected out of him? Not what you expected, but what you saw early to what you see now as a player. He certainly has made a huge impact on Purdue basketball.
When I first saw Mason Gillis play, he was in high school, and he was a very different player than he is now. Much more athletic, much more of a go-to scorer type of guy. The knee injuries in high school really probably took away from that a little bit, but probably also shaped him to what he is now—an absolute grinder and somebody who's just had that unbelievable knack for just changing a game by chasing an offensive rebound. That is a very unique ability. And, Purdue's had maybe a couple of guys. Chris Kramer was one who could do that, but that's a very, very unique characteristic to have. The fact that he's really been a shot maker too and such a good leader for this team. This is the classic example. Mason Gillis is a really competitive guy. He really, really, was in a position this year where he has earned at Purdue a big time role and like a starting one of your team's best players sort of role. And he's, obviously Purdue made the personnel move going with Trey Kaufman-Wrenn as a starter. I think he started every game this year, but Gillis ends up playing more because that's the way sometimes the matchups go a lot. And he's had a great year. I mean, he's. I don't think I vote on sixth man of the year, but if I do, he's got to be up there. And it's almost disingenuous to call him a sixth man because you look at him as a sixth starter. You look at Trey Kaufman-Wrenn and Mason Gillis as a combination as a starting player, in which case I think Purdue would have five all Big Ten starters. But obviously, you can't morph those guys into one person. Gillis is just, I mean, he's just the ultimate competitor, and he's a guy who everything he does 100 miles an hour. He does full speed, he does full bore, sometimes for better and worse. Unbelievable student, unbelievable leader, unbelievable energy, unbelievable intensity, unbelievable competitor, nonstop motor. You just can't say enough about what he has meant to Purdue's kind of basketball culture. Too, he's been sort of one of those tone setters. He's been the ultimate complement to Zach Edey. I think those two go perfectly together, tethering them together on the floor together. How many times can I say together?
Yeah, there.
I just think he's been everything, Purdue always has held itself up as everything that, Purdue wants to build its program around. And I just can't say enough good things about him.
Yeah, Matt Painter said, I think after Tuesday night's game about something I've been talking about it, Gillis's desire to get into a fight or get or bring the fight
He'd
to the
rather
game,
fight you
so to
than talk
speak.
to you. Yeah.
Yeah, and I like that quote. And yet Gillis, like you talked about, if you talk to the guy, he's extremely. We know he's a bright guy. He's extremely personable and a guy that brings it. But talk about that need that he's brought to. Not that Purdue's a bunch of nice guys, but they are. They have this wonderful culture as we always talk about. But they've got some guys with edge. Braden Smith has that as well. Lawyer certainly has that. Gillis has that. That blend really helps. And Gillis, I think, leads the pack in terms of being that kind of that alpha male when it comes to, being making sure that they're supporting your teammates from a physical nature.
Well, you can be a nice guy and a competitor at the same time.
Yeah.
I think Trey Kaufman-Wrenn is one of the most unique people I've ever covered at Purdue because he's the most thoughtful, intellectual guy I've ever covered on Purdue's basketball team. But he also works his you know what off, and he's really competitive, and he just wants to win so bad. I think Braden Smith is, you know, the ultimate competitor. I think Fletcher Loyer is, his quiet competitiveness is something I don't think really is noticeable on TV or even in an arena. But when you're around the guy and you realize what a kind of savage competitor he is, it really belies, you know, the optics of it because he looks like your paper boy. But Gillis is obviously the guy who wears it on his sleeve as much as anybody else. And, you know, the worst place to be is between him and a loose basketball. I think he's one of those rare guys, as I mentioned before, that could impose his will on games and just change it by just trying really hard. I think that play he made against Michigan State, where he just chased the ball and smacked it back to Edie for a 3-point play, was maybe not intentional, but just classic productivity, finding somebody who just tries really hard. I just think this is a much more competitive, a much more confident Purdue team than it was a year ago. And Mason Gillis and on down the line have everything to do with it.
All right. The other senior player that's going, well, there's two more, but we're going to hit with Lance Jones, obviously only a year at Purdue, but if Purdue gets to where it wants to in the NCAA tournament, he's going to have everything to do with Purdue's growth throughout the course of the year. Just talk about, you know, he went through some personal, a huge personal tragedy when he came here, when he was on his visit and when his dad passed away shortly after that. But the fact that you've written about it many times, the fact he plays with joy seems to loosen this team up a little bit, or I don't know in terms of did he have that effect. But again, he has been a remarkable find, but also as a player that's played in this game for a while in college, his career, his legacy, not only just at Purdue, but at Southern Illinois, is pretty well cemented in a very, very, very good college career.
Yeah, he's really completed Purdue from a basketball perspective, with his athleticism, him filling that need for a secondary ball handler. I think he's the reason they've been so good against presses. In addition to having Braden Smith, obviously having two of those guys is a big deal. But I think beyond that, I think he's another one of these guys, and there's a couple of them on this team, starting with Braden Smith, whose just demeanor just wore off on this team. I think his energy really was a breath of fresh air for this team. There is a reality here that, you know, for Purdue, this whole season could have been a year-long, you know, panic attack because of all the negativity around them because of what happened in the NCAA tournament last year. Just him being kind of a mood changer to a certain extent, I think there was some value there. Whether or not anyone would say that out loud, I don't know. But if you just watch the games and you see this guy with a big smile on his face, who's, you know, really excitable, really exciting, there's got to be value to that. Beyond that, I think that his fearlessness is another part of it. His perimeter defense, I think he's been a pretty good defensive player for Purdue this season. And obviously that's something pretty badly needed. But just a great dude, just a really, really pleasant guy and an outlier in this mercenary culture that's taking over college basketball nowadays. I hate the COVID year, as you're well aware. I'm not a huge fan of this. Everybody go recruit a new team every year stuff. But this is one of the success stories because this is a guy who got to a higher level. He didn't show up asking for money. He wasn't in it for anything other than wanting to play at the highest level, maybe set himself up for something professionally somewhere, and has been grateful for everything that's come his way at Purdue and has been the rare case of a guy who's only on a campus for like 6 months or whatever, really, really connecting with a campus community and really connecting with a program's culture and really connecting with a fan base. That's getting lost in all of this stuff. Perfect example, Illinois. They had their senior night yesterday. Four of those guys were transfers. Three of those guys were on campus for like a couple months because they're all one-year grad transfers. And, you know, sort of the same thing with Lance Jones, where he wasn't here very long. But how attached can you get to a kid when he's only on your team for one season? I think Purdue has been the exception with Lance Jones to that rule where people will remember Lance Jones for a long, long time. People have come to really, really love Lance Jones, genuinely love him. And I think he's come to genuinely love, Purdue and, Purdue's fan base and all that. Just a really, really neat story. And one of the real success stories in this very bizarre college basketball environment. Him and Dalton Knecht at Tennessee are two of the guys who really come to mind as guys who really, really are positive stories coming out of this really, really bizarre, sometimes toxic transfer and NIL environments.
Yes, as you so well documented, I had the people read it to me verbatim during the game last night. Your comment about Illinois' lineup and where they got their guys from, beautifully written and articulated, in a different situation certainly than what Purdue does. Lance Jones also, I think one of the things that we talked about a little bit is the fact that he that joy and also that he doesn't have any memory of Purdue's checkered past in the NCAA tournament, and that can be of help as well. Do you think he has? I mean, and this isn't the top of mind concern for you, but he will play somewhere professionally. What you would think he will get an opportunity to do so, it should he choose to do that. I mean, he's got that ability. I'm not saying necessarily the NBA, but I am saying that he is a guy that ought to get a chance somewhere.
Well, certainly, if he wants it, he'll have an opportunity to play overseas without question,
Yeah.
and play for a very long time. But sometimes too, with the NBA, all you got to do is get your foot in the door, and funny things can happen. It's an athlete's league. It's an open court league,
Yeah.
and that's where he excels, obviously. He can create shots for himself. He can be a pretty good on-ball defender, I think. I don't see any reason why he can't get, a couple tryouts or whatever. And once you get your foot in the door, you never know. But as of right now, I would project him probably as a guy who plays 10 years overseas if he wants to. Not everybody necessarily wants that, but I think he'll. I'm inclined to believe he's probably a guy who'd like to make a living out of basketball if he can.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Zach Edey, it's not enough time to go into his legacy, but just your experiences with him, not only watching him play and doing what he has done on the court, but his story, his demeanor, his selflessness for a guy that's a superstar is pretty remarkable. It's not pretty remarkable, it's very remarkable. And again, part of the story of this team has just been his desire to come back. And do it with a chip on his shoulder, which seems to have permeated this team. But also, he didn't have to do that necessarily, and yet he chose to. And that speaks a lot about him. But there are going to be a lot of things you're going to remember about Zach Edey. But some of your reflections on him.
Yeah, I think he probably owes me some medical bills for the kink in the back of my neck from having to look up
Yeah.
at him interviewing him all the time. But
Yeah.
no, let me tell a story here real quick
Yeah.
about Zach Edey. I've had some health tribulations here in the last year or so. And back in the fall, I finished chemotherapy and I wrote something about it. And I go to Big Ten Media Day in October. And I'm walking in and I hear this voice behind me, Brian, Brian, Brian. And I turn around and it's him. And he had just walked in with Purdue's contingent. And he had must have seen what I wrote or something. And out comes this gigantic hand. Hey, congratulations on finishing chemo. And like, who does that?
Yeah,
When
yeah.
there's so much going on for these guys, he's always been a guy who kind of thinks beyond himself. And I think he thinks of his teammates above himself. Like, I don't think Braden Smith needs people taking up for him. I think his play has spoken for itself. But Zach Edey has constantly been pushing Braden Smith's name out there on his various social media channels and just the apparent relationship between those two guys have been really unique considering the dimensions of the two of them.
Yeah.
But their symbiotic relationship on the court, has been really, really neat to watch. He's just been a selfless guy, a good dude, a really, really good representative of Purdue. Obviously people have connected with him and his family. mom is more popular than Zach is, but and for good
Yeah.
reason. She's awesome. But
She's awesome.
no, it's just a great story. It's a wholesome story, you know. It's an unbelievable story. And you know, one of the questions I want to ask Edie when we talk to him after the season is, who do you want to play you in the movie? Because it would be
Yeah.
perfectly reasonable for, you know, this giant kid from Canada who's playing hockey as a sophomore, or whatever, and then just decides to pick up a basketball and then becomes this. Is it just, you can't even describe it. Now, where his legacy ultimately falls in Purdue basketball history, I mean, it's hard. It's hard to do much more than what he's done. Now, what happens later this month is his obvious opportunity to cement himself as the greatest player in Purdue basketball history, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Again, comparing eras is kind of funny, but ultimately his career gets judged in large part by winning. Now, he's won two straight outright Big Ten titles. That's a big deal. He's been part of three straight number one ranked teams. That's a huge deal. Now comes the most important part. Fair or not, this is a cruel game, man. You know, the NCAA tournament is just the most randomized championship event in sports, the cruelest championship event in sports. And you never know what's going to happen. And it's unfair that people's legacies get tied to this stuff. It's ridiculous that people get jobs and get fired off of this stuff. But it kind of is what it is. So in the court of public opinion, in the court of perception, this is going to be a big month for Zach Edey. But everything he's done this season, last season, speaks to him really going out with a bang here.
Yeah, I think it's well said. And the personal story he said that is the little I know of Zach Edey, which is a little. And he is exactly what you said. He is just a selfless. He thinks of others first, and it shows on the basketball court. Okay, one other popular, you know, we talked about. There's been a lot written about Braden Smith, and now that he is up for the fi as a finalist for the Cousy Award, and is he going to make All Big Ten? Is he going to make All American first team? I should say. But Matt Painter also in Big Ten Coach of the Year, which I know is not going to happen, I don't think, unless I'm missing something, just because it doesn't go to one. He was one of the two favorites this year. Certainly Purdue and Michigan State were the preseason favorites, I guess it's fair to say. But talk about the job he's done, just what you've watched again. You know, you've kind of been used to being around him for a very long time. I mean, as long as he's been the head coach at Purdue, anything that he has done differently, or what do you think has been his special suit this year in terms of helping Purdue to get to the level that it is currently?
Well, I actually do think he's going to be Big Ten Coach of the Year. He's got my vote at least. That might seem myopic, but people don't realize how different this Purdue team was. Everybody looks at all the faces and says and recognizes him as the same as last year. But he did have to implement a couple of really big pieces here. Lance Jones being one of them. Obviously, they juggled their lineups a little bit. I think they completely changed our offense. You know. This isn't the post-centric offense people think about when they think of Zach Edey and Purdue. They shifted their focus to more ball screens, which Braden Smith has unlocked something even more than last year from that. And I think that made Edey a better player. And I think they could have just kept on doing what they were doing last year. And it would have been hard to really argue with the results last year outside of that one game in March. I think that this has been the most confident team I've ever covered, as I said before. Part of that is just the natural evolution of some of these guys, the maturation process, the experience factor, things like that. But this was a team that didn't have enough confidence when it mattered most last year. And they have 180 degree turned from that point to this point. And Painter has always been a big player empowerment guy when it comes to propping up his players and trying to cultivate confidence. And the players deserve the credit more than anyone in that regard because they've all grown up. They've all benefited from their experience. But I think Painter's approach to them, not letting last season affect them, and not letting doubt creep in at any point in time this season. Even when these guys lost after games,
yeah,
they were always like, yeah, we're fine. It was just the most buoyant team, the most confident team, again, that I have covered. And you have to give the coach a lot of credit for that. And I think just the fact that Purdue was a different team and he changed when he didn't necessarily have to change, I think made this the best coaching job of the Big Ten this year. Right now, my ballot is Painter, Ben Johnson, and then probably Fred Hoiberg. But yes, Painter did have the best team, but it's not the same team by any stretch of the imagination. This wasn't a roll the ball out on the court and go win 30 games team.
Yeah, I think I can tell myself I didn't critically think through that very well when I said it isn't going to happen, because you're really right. You built a very good case. I mean, when you look around the league, and yes, I think you've identified the other two guys that would be in contention, but Purdue is going to win the Big Ten in all likelihood by at least three games, maybe four, if Iowa beats Illinois this weekend. That's consecutive years of winning the league by three games plus. I think no team since Indiana in 75 and 76 can say that. That's an extremely impressive thing. And you're right. It does require those that vote on it to think through this a little bit and have the ability and maybe to have watched Purdue enough to say, yes, this team really is different and has taken a huge jump forward at this point in time. And that's a great storyline that I think you've well documented there from that on down the line. So, all right. So it'll be Purdue, Wisconsin on Saturday or on Sunday, and and then Brian will be taking off for the Boilermakers will play Friday at noon, a week from Friday, I should say, in the Big Ten tournament. That's already set 11 o'clock local time, and they'll play. Who knows who the Boilermakers will play, but we'll figure that part out by the time they'll assign. We won't know, I guess, for sure who they're playing, because the team has to win Thursday night to get a chance to play Purdue in the 8-9 game. But it will be interesting. Last question for you, I wanted to ask is your view towards the Big Ten tournament. I think you've written about this and talked about this some. I think I know what the answer is, but again, no reason to mail that in if you're Purdue, and I don't see this group wanting to do that anyway. So it's
no,
probably a
go win the
question.
Thing. These opportunities don't come along very often. When you have opportunities to win
even if you got a big yes
with a team like this, go win the championship. The last thing you want to do, in my opinion, and my opinion did change on this a couple of years ago because of the rest factor, but I think that why end the season on a loss when you don't have to? You know, we just talked about confidence and how important confidence has been for this team. Don't mess with a winning streak. Go out there, win every game. Not that Purdue has ever tanked this thing on purpose just to get an extra day or two of rest, but Purdue just had two bye weeks in the last couple weeks of the season. Purdue is in much better shape than it was a year ago. Purdue is in a much better mental place than it was at this time a year ago. Go win the thing. I mean, I just don't see any counter argument. It doesn't make sense to me. I just don't see any reason to not go win a championship if you have a chance to win a championship.
Yeah, well said. And Purdue will, looking even further down the road, it will play in Indianapolis, 99 and 44, 100% sure of that. That will be a Friday-Sunday sequence. So Purdue will have plenty of time to rest if they get to Sunday in the Big Ten tournament as well. In fact, if they go Indianapolis to Detroit, it'll be Friday-Sunday both weeks. If the Boilermakers can make their way up to the Motor City for the Sweet 16. So, Brian, thanks again so much. We will take a short break here and be back. More Senior Day talk as well, and we'll look forward to that as well. Stay tuned, but make sure you tune in and not only to Brian's rap video and drive home, great stuff on iTunes in addition to YouTube and on our site. But a lot of his coverage coming up for the next maybe the next 10 games for Purdue. So stay tuned. We'll be back in 2 minutes on Golden Black Live. Segment two, Golden Black Live, and Tammy McCall joins us. Tammy doesn't need any introduction to me because I've enjoyed the opportunity to sit with her for many games this year, and the mom of Mason Gillis. And after Tuesday's win, Mason's had an unbelievable season, and nothing bigger than what happened in Champaign. And now it's senior night, and I know that's a challenging time, I would guess, for parents, and certainly walking down the aisle, but at least coming to Mackey for the last time. And Tammy, you've been through a 5 years of this in one form or another, and of course I have a daughter that's an athlete as well. But we'll be at a, what are some of your thoughts as you start to look forward to Sunday and that game against Wisconsin and Senior Day?
This whole, everything's just kind of been a whirlwind, so it's just like one more step.
Yeah.
And I think that's how we are in a lot of our lives between me and my children. It's just like, okay, what's next? And so, but when you're in the moment, you can stop and it hits you. But going into it, it's just like one more step. And that's how we approach everything. It'll be hard because it's been such a fun ride. And it's such a great group of teammates. In our eyes, they're all just kids. And families also. It's just been so much fun and a blessing last year and this year going through it with the group that we've gone through it with. So that will be hard because of what a special group it's been, not even their accomplishments, but just as individuals.
Yeah. You guys get, you're a world traveler, but you're a traveler too of being on the road and getting to games and being, and seeing other Mason's teammates, their parents as well. When you're at a place like Illinois on Tuesday night, and it was a raucous environment to say the least, do you feel, I mean, do you band together as a group? Do you, I mean, how is that? Is it us against them? I mean, you're probably a competitive person, but I know you are, but in terms of how do you deal with that notion? Or is that just another game for you?
I think it's nice. I mean, we are only allotted a very small area within those arenas. And so especially as the immediate families, when we're right down there on the court side and usually tend right up next to the student sections, you do kind of band together and you just try to cheer for your own. And it's hard to tune them out sometimes, but if there's things going on, we do band together and support each other through it. It's just, everybody competes. But it's fun. And it's a good group to be sitting there through that stuff with.
Yeah. And you have Julia Edie gets a lot of, obviously with Zach gets a lot of the attention. And yet I know, and I've seen you with other parents, what is there a common thread in terms, I mean, the team seems to have such a great culture. My guess is that's, and you've kind of hit on this, that the parents are kind of cut out of the same cloth. I mean, you're for everybody else. Sure, you want your son to do well, but you want the team to do well. Is that a fair assessment of your colleagues that are parents of Purdue team members?
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, like, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree in any situation with the players on the team. Like, all of the, what you see in the players is what you see in the parents too. And everybody's cheering each other on and supporting each other and fills each other's pains in different situations and stuff. It's a good group.
Yeah. When you have, like I said, everybody's got personality. Mason is well known as being certainly a very good leader, but maybe being the one that's I did a recent interview with him, a little more on the vocal side, on the leadership side. He will be the one that will protect his guys. That's pretty clear. And yet that growing up, as he always, he talked about in the interview about how he had to mature, that you as your parents, you know, you made him go to, when you went to church, he taught him how to look somebody in the eye and shake people's hands and stand up. Has that been a process for him? Or has he kind of turned out the way you thought he would 6 or 7 years ago when he was still in high school?
I'd say both. I mean, like, he's always been, even though he's small out there on the court in the Big Ten in his position around us where we grew up, he's always been a bigger and stronger kid. So he kind of had to mature and grow up a little bit quicker than a lot of his friends just because of the expectations that people didn't know him would think that he was older. And so it was kind of always, and he's always been a little bit more mature kid in those ways. But yes, in the community that we grew up, that I grew up in and that he grew up in, that's how he was raised, to stand up, to shake somebody with a firm hand, to look them in the eyes. And I see that in him daily. You know, that was always the expectation. You compete every day. The opportunities will be provided and I will work to get you those opportunities, but you have to compete and give 100% with the opportunities you're given. And so seeing that play out every single time he hits the court is rewarding.
Yeah, I would think. And you are I know you were a college athlete and ran, I think ran cross country, right? A runner as well.
Yeah.
Does he follow your competitive flair? I mean, is that are you that type of when you're, and it's different maybe in running, but you got to have mental toughness. That seems to be something he has a lot of. Are you going to take all the credit for that, or where'd that come from?
No, his dad's very competitive too. I mean, his dad played basketball, Bill played basketball, and I mean, we are all very competitive. So it's just in the blood in everything, whether it's academics, day-to-day living, basketball, whatever it is, it's just giving it your all and competing.
Yeah, even in Scrabble at home or games that you might play at home, do they get, do you remember times him growing up where he would get mad if you beat him, or
both him and his sister.
Pardon me?
Him and his sister, like it would be all out. Like they had to learn to lose. You didn't just let them win. They both had to learn to lose. And whether it was card games, board games, or pick up basketball games on the court out back, it was, you didn't just give in. We were all competing.
I'm guessing that's true. I mean, I believe it. You lived it, but it sure is evident on him. Lauren, your daughter, also a Division I athlete in volleyball, has a job in sports as well. One of you talked about her ability. She I don't know if she's going to be able to come on senior day, but also for hopefully a long run in the NCAA tournament. One of the byproducts of her opportunity and job is she may have a little bit of flexibility to get back and watch her brother play.
Yes. Yep. She'll be there for senior day and she'll be there for the Big Ten tournament. And then we'll see where we go from there.
Yeah, that's right. One step at a time, I think, is a good tact. We've learned that throughout the entire process. Okay. You've been to a lot of arenas in the Big Ten. I mean, you and I've had some discussions about some of the ones that have been more challenging, but one of the ones, are there any that stand out for ones that you might like? Maybe it was games that Purdue won. I don't know, though they won in most of them. The Boilermakers did, but what ones stand out to you maybe as a best or a middle or one that's not as good, or do you say what you want to say about the road venues and your experiences?
Honestly, I would say some of them have shifted throughout the years. And it's also kind of jaded because like 1 year there were no fans there, the year of COVID. So we've been through a lot of that too. And so then you see fans coming back in. I have to give credit to IU. You could tell the first 2 years ago was very rough. One of the worst places we've ever played in. Last year was better. This year, I would say you can definitely tell that they are trying to change the climate there. And there was a lot more cheering for their own team, which was positive to see. And I was very impressed with that they have worked on trying to change the culture of cheering for their own team and not berating us. So that was a positive to see. And I do think that some of the arenas have heated up as our team has climbed the ranks and everything. So I think that, you know, some arenas that I would have said like 2 years ago were great to play at might be a different story this year. So it's
Nebraska
very
being one or Yeah, right.
So it's varied and stuff, but they're all, I mean, it's some of them are harder than others when they're cheering so heavily against us and not just for their own team. That, and I'm not going to say positives or negatives in direct arenas, I don't think. But that's the hardest part, is when they're attacking individuals instead of cheering for their own team.
Yeah, and it seems to me, and maybe it's maybe when sitting in Mackey Arena, I'm sure there's some of that there, but I think Purdue fans are pretty good. It seems, yeah. And I understand the team's been good, and they've been, and you haven't lost a game at home this year. I get all that, but it seems to me that that's a fair.
And we were talking about that last night. A lot of parents were like, just trying to think back about our games, and it's just, and I think it's a culture. I mean, I think, you know, a couple of years ago, Coach Pink cut out the one song where everybody would chant about IU, and that was cut out from the top down. And so then the rest of the fans follow suit, and you don't, I mean, cause we were like really racking our brains. Like, did you ever hear this? Cause you know, you want to question yourself when you're so attacked at other places at times, like we are not like that, are we? Do we just miss it? But honestly, I think that it's just a great culture and a great competitive environment where they're about their home team and they're cheering for their team, and it's, they're not concerned about berating the other team. They want to lift their own team up, which is very much appreciated by the players and the parents.
Yeah, and I am a huge fan of eliminating what they eliminated with that. I think you're right. That's an interesting point. I hadn't really thought of it, but it may have actually permeated through just kind of the way you behave a little bit. I mean, it is supposed to be. We understand the wonderful world of social media and all the things that you can do and see that you're going to get some of that, but I'd rather be known, if you're Purdue, I think you want to be known as a place. It is one of the great venues in college basketball, without question. But it can be a relatively positive experience, except you want Purdue to take care of business at home, and they do that all the time. So all right, I gotta ask you then, your proudest moments of Mason, as you look back. What are you most proud of what he's accomplished? He had the greatest game against Penn State when he scores 29 points, and every time he makes a three, it's exciting, but he's a lot more than that. But what do you say, boy, I'm going to look at this now back and say, this is really what he got out of his Purdue experience, and the thing that maybe you're most proud of?
I would say his growth and resiliency. And, you know, everybody knows some of the difficult times he's gone through. And he took it on his chest. He took care of what he had to take care of, and he grew through that. No student athlete, no college student is perfect. And unfortunately, when you're at a student athlete, it gets raked through the coals. But I think the way that he has handled it and addressed it and grown from it, from that one perspective, and then also just competing every year for himself and for his teammates and for the university, and the growth through that. You know, he's had his injuries, and it's just, you handle each one and it's check that off and move on to the next thing. You know, you can't hang your head, and just trying, just his resiliency and his being there for his teammates and being there for his team. And even in difficult times, I think, and just always competing, doing what needs to be done at that moment for the team.
He has certainly done that. And my experiences with him, which aren't all that many, but certainly a few, that he is just always handles himself in a first class manner. And he certainly, brings honor to your family, because he's done that as not only as a player and basketball aside. I mean, basketball is great. He's great at it. That's all well and good, but the other stuff is kind of the stuff that's really important. So, we thank you so much. You know, it's funny because you and I, when I didn't even know who you were, this is last year, I tend to sit in a section that you sit in, because I'm a man without a country sometimes in seats. So I go grab a seat. And we were talking last year, talked about, you know, Mason, I think it had a back injury. And I always was so impressed by you, because you sit there at home quietly and enjoy the game. And we were talking, I was talking with somebody about Mason, about his back, and you piped in and said, well, you know, I'm actually his mom. And that was a great first experience. And I've enjoyed so much sitting next to you and the times we've had to do that and sharing some of the experiences with you and meeting your daughter as well. So we thank you for that. We
Thank
thank you for the time today. And you know what? It's good that nice of you to come out, and not always an easy thing to do to talk about your son in an emotional time, but let's hope it goes on for, I hope you get to go to Indianapolis, which will be close for you, and then
Yes.
Detroit, which won't be all that far, and then you'll get hopefully one step at a time. Maybe you'll get a trip to Arizona as well, but it'd be exciting too. So thanks so much, Tammy. We appreciate it, and best of luck to you and your family, and best of luck. I know you'll hold it together during senior day, but it will be an emotional day for Purdue fans because there aren't gonna be many players in the history.
Segment three, joined by Marley Thomas. If you're a Lafayette area person or anywhere in the viewership of WLFI, you know who she is. But if you go into Mackey Arena, which there's going to be on Sunday, Marley, about 16,000 people in there, of which you're going to be entertaining them. You know, Marley Thomas obviously is a game host for Purdue men's basketball, and I know you're a working person on game nights. But we got to ask you about Wednesday or Tuesday night's game against Illinois, and that sets up. They are now the Big Ten outright champions. You're going to have a festive atmosphere on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, I always think every game, I'm like, oh, it can't get better than this. It can't get better than this. But honestly, somehow it does. Every single game, it continues to get louder in there. The fans are just even more excited than before. So every single game, honestly, it never ceases to amaze me just how awesome it is in Mackey Arena.
Well, you know, it's going to be that way Sunday because it's going to be emotional. That's
Yeah.
part of it. Now, that maybe not during your part of the show, so to speak, but you know, saying goodbye to Zach Edey and Mason Gillis and Ethan Morton and Lance Jones, it's hard to minimize that. And when you have an event like that, and yes, it's going to be festive during the course of the game, assuming Purdue takes care of business, which I think it will. But just talk about that emotion of saying goodbye to those guys. It's a challenge for Purdue fans.
Yeah, and I think that the team in general does a really good job of just trying to interact with fans and just keeping that good fan base too. I mean, Purdue has a great fan base, and I feel like these fans, from what I've noticed, I've hosted for 3 years, and what I've noticed through this time is the fans are so connected with the players. They may not know them personally, but they love the sport, love the team, love the school so much that they feel like they know them personally. And I think it's going to be, like you mentioned, very emotional because these fans have come to watch these players every single game all season for multiple seasons. And they feel like they have a connection with them. And I think that's also reciprocated too with the players, with the fans too. I mean, they feel connected to them as well. So you're absolutely right. It will be pretty emotional, you know, saying goodbye to those players because they've just done a fantastic job, and just great young men too.
No question. And they are showing it on the basketball court as well. All right, one thing will be interesting. It's spring break at Purdue,
Oh.
and that will not lower the attendance because it's going to be shoulder to shoulder, and ticket prices already, as we talk on Friday here, that it's going to be astronomical for at least lower arena tickets if you buy them on the secondary market. But talk about, just because you have to deal with it and you do it so seamlessly and do such a great job with it, but difference between a game where the students are there, and there'll be students there, rest assured. There'll be, but not maybe in the great as great a numbers as there typically would be if school was in session. But talk about the difference between the crowd, between a spring break crowd and or a holiday crowd, in which you'd have to deal with some time to time with the students on a typical game.
Yeah, that's a great question because
that's always something we think about, you know, heading into the game and stuff, you know, because I know over Christmas break, obviously, a lot of students were gone back, you know, home. So it is a little bit different in Mackey, I will say. But also, I mean, like I said earlier, I never am seized to amaze just by what takes place in there. Like the
Yeah.
fans do take those seats in the student section. I mean, they do a fantastic job at, you know, keeping that energy up and remaining loud and everything along those lines. Now, for my job, you know, I do a lot with the paint crew and the student section.
Yeah.
So whether that's bringing, you know, those students down on the court for different things, or that's me going up there and doing things with them, that part is a little bit different because it's not maybe
Yeah.
guaranteed that it's going to be a student who I, you
Right.
know, use for those segments. But it's just, it's always so great. And they always do such a fantastic job. But, you know, the students, they've been so excited this year too for the free chicken. So,
Yeah.
and that's so funny because on, I forget which specific game it was, but it was over Christmas break. And, even the fans who were sitting in the student section seats while the students weren't there, they were just excited to get that free chicken as the students were. So that was actually so funny. They were still so loud and wanted to make sure that they missed those free throws.
Yeah, no doubt. And that will come up. It almost came up in Tuesday night's game. Now they have a different promotion in Illinois, but Zach Edey at least hit the second free throw a couple times. They weren't responding there though, at least on television. I'm watching the game like they do in Mackey. I mean, it's nuts in Mackey. And it's happened, what, the IU game, the Minnesota game down the stretch here. It's happened a couple of times. And it is an amazing, amazing fun promotion that Slim Chickens. Now they're not the Triple X who are a sponsor, but they are their promotion's pretty darn good. All right, you have to have had some fun stories in 3 years. Some people that you might not have expected behave the way that they're supposed to. I haven't seen, at least in my time watching, where somebody was out kind of out of control. But maybe you had to rein things in a little bit. What was your Give us an example of some of them having to think on your feet and react to a situation that may have come off better than it may have seemed like it was going to come off.
Well, that's a great question because, you know, with what I do, it is very fluid, it's very fast paced, and also those media timeouts are so quick too. So you're really on a timeline
Yeah.
as far as, you know, how fast you have to kind of move things. But for me, I have a script, and what I always do is just keep a couple of bullet points in my head, like, okay, what challenge we're gonna do, and how much time they have, and what they win. And then
Yeah.
when I go out on the court for those different situations, I pretty much ad lib what is going to happen. So for me
Yeah.
personally, I've had a couple of moments where I've like trying to ad lib what's taking place. And then, you know, you just have a brain fart. Everybody has those
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
but so a lot of times I walk off the court and I'm like, man, I really did awful at that. I really stuttered or forgot what I was going to say. But I hope that it doesn't come across that way to the fans. But to me personally, I know I messed up. So I think a little bit more of it than what other people might. But
I think that's true.
a lot of times, you know, you never know what you're going to get because it's live.
Yeah.
So there's been a couple of times where we've taken a media timeout after maybe a call that Purdue fans don't agree with,
Oh, yeah.
or you know, the opposing team doesn't agree with. So it kind of gets loud in the arena, whether it be fans booing or you know, just upset with the call. And then I have to go out and, you know, interact with fans
They're
and be
not booing you,
positive.
Marley.
So it's kind of just funny because I've noticed sometimes when those media timeouts happen, you know, right after maybe a call that is not agreed upon, it kind of is a little tricky because I have to go out and be like, okay, here we go. You know, let's switch gears and let's not think about that call. Let's stay positive, you know.
Yeah, I think that is the true thing. Now, how much switching on the fly though, based on the situation? Do you have times where a promotion or something's going to go on court doesn't because of what happened? Or is that, I know Chris Pelliott and company run a pretty tight ship with how that stage is set, so to speak. But how much does that ever happen? Do you ever knock one out because of what transpired on the court?
No, really not. I can't really remember a time where that has happened. It's just kind of been some situations where there's a lot of communication going on, you know, during the games. I stand down in the tunnel by everybody that I work with down there, and they know exactly what they're doing. And I'm so thankful to work alongside them, because they are, if I have any questions, they are my go-to people, and they always have the answers. So I don't really remember a time where I didn't have to go out at a certain specific time because of something that happened. I mean, it's pretty much go, go, go. And it's a lot of fun.
And is there a time where you do more in the first half, or is it pretty equal in terms of your court appearances or your fan appearances when you're in the crowd? Is it set pretty much the same, or do you tend to go more in the first half?
Yeah, every game it depends, and it kind of switches up too. So it's not really a set in stone thing as far as if I do more segments during the first half or the second half. It's not really it's not really a set in stone thing. It kind of depends on the game. So for me, there might be one game where I only do one segment during the first half, and then maybe two or three in the second half. So it just totally depends. And also it depends on what else is taking place at the game as well. So if there's, you know, they recognize student athletes, and whether we're going to have, you know, the cheerleaders come out or the dance team come out for different media timeouts, you know, that impacts it as well. So totally just depends on the game for sure.
All right. Well, you're used to being in front of the camera as your day job and night job, and what used to be morning job, which we miss you on that. But but the whole situation, and that's because Marley and I used to do a segment on Channel 18 every Friday morning that we still do. But like I said, we miss Marley on that for me. But that whole situation where, you know, you now have worked your way to doing quick post-game interviews as well. Mm-hmm. Talk about the, you know, how you get ready for that, and that's, I think, a nice add-on to have that quick hit right after the game is over to be able to talk to a player about what happened.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I've enjoyed really being able to do those post-game interviews. And I will say it's been a bit of a learning curve for me, because at my normal, you know, weekday job, I am in news. So for me, it's been kind of a little bit of a transition to be able to flip that switch in my head, because your news interviews that you do are completely different than your post-game interviews that you do. So your post-game interviews are more quick. They're, you know, how you feeling after this big win, talk about that big play you made. There, it's just a little bit of a different type of interview. So it's been really fun for me to change it up and get that experience because I had never been able to do that before. So it's been awesome. And honestly, I've gotten to kind of get to know some of the players, and I hope that they feel comfortable when they see me coming up to them with the microphone. I hope that they're like, okay, it's Marley, you know. I hope that they feel comfortable, because they've all been so well spoken, and they've always given great interviews. And honestly, it's called instant reaction, because we want to get that instant reaction. So it's a lot of, you know, how you feel after this big win. You know, I spoke to Zach Edey after, what was it, Sunday's game or Saturday's game, and he was just so excited. You know, here they are celebrating the Big Ten championship, you know, so to get that raw instant reaction, I feel like it's really fun, and you get to see a lot of their personalities as well.
You're a tall enough woman, but he's tall enough. I mean, did you have to react to that, to putting the mic up like this? You seem to that's a little bit of a challenge to make sure you can get him on the mic, so to speak.
Yeah, you got to think too. It's so loud in Mackey Arena too, even after games. So it's hard to hear in general, and then also, you know, and I wear heels at every single game. So for me, I'm already tall, but then when I wear heels, I'm still not tall enough to, you know, be the same height as Zach, or even really even close. So it's so funny, because he usually has to bend down for me a little bit. And I appreciate that, because I can't get up there to him.
All right. Well, you had that experience of being on the floor with it, where obviously Purdue clinched a share of the Big Ten championship against Michigan State. Now they have it outright. There's no drama with that on Sunday. But talk about just what that was like being on the court with the confetti coming down. Did you have to get confetti out of your clothes for the next few days? How did that go from your experience?
Yeah, I mean, it was awesome, as you can imagine, and just trying to soak it all in. And yeah, it's been such a fun season, and I love what I do so much. So for me, it was kind of a surreal moment to just stand there and be like, wow, I'm so lucky to be a part of this and so grateful and so thankful. So for me, it was kind of one of these weird situations where I was like, this is so cool, like just cool way to explain it. But also it was kind of funny because with all of the confetti everywhere, it was one of those situations where we're all standing around, you know, cheering, clapping for the team, celebrating. Well, we've all got confetti somewhere stuck, whether it be on our shoulder or on top of our head, you know, you kind of find it everywhere, but wouldn't have traded that moment for anything, because it was honestly just something I'll never forget in the rest of my life.
All right, now I'm going to caution our viewers and to rewind the last 45 seconds of what Marley just said and stick it in your craw for the rest of the day. It is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Whether Purdue wins the national championship or not, enjoy the ride. And I think that's a great message, because it has been an unbelievable season. If Purdue wins Sunday, it will be one of three seasons where they've gone – throughout the year without three or four, I think, in the history of the building, where they'll have gone through the season undefeated. And Marley, your record in 3 years is pretty darn good at home. They need to keep you around. I think you've only had a couple losses, and they're pretty amazing from that standpoint.
Oh,
so,
thanks,
well, Marley. Thanks so much for joining us. Enjoyed it very much, and always enjoy your company. It's always a breath of fresh air, and we'll look forward to enjoying it in what will be, like you said, an emotional but exciting game Sunday, Senior Day, when Purdue takes on Wisconsin. 12, I think it's a 12:30 tip for the final home game of the 2023-24 season. So we'll look forward to year four. You're going to have some new guys next year. That'll be fun. New players. That's all part of the fun. But thanks again so much.
Thanks, Alan. Great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Want to thank our guests, Ryan Neubert and Tammy McCall, mom to Mason Gillis, and of course, Marley Thomas. As we head into Senior Day and Purdue, the regular season outright Big Ten champions, we'll have a special day on Sunday in Mackey Arena, saying goodbye, an emotional goodbye, I'm sure, to Zach Edey and Mason Gillis, Ethan Morton, Lance Jones, Carson Barrett, Chase Martin, on down the line. It will be a memorable day in Mackey Arena as we turn our attention to the Big Ten tournament and the NCAA tournament. We will not have a Saturday simulcast next week because the Boilermakers should presumably be playing on Saturday in the Big Ten tournament, but we will have ones upcoming throughout the NCAA tournament. So thank you again for watching and listening. And a reminder, if you like this Zoomcast, make sure you like us on our YouTube channel or on our iTunes. And a reminder too, you might consider subscribing to goldenblack.com, become a member of our community, or a great gift idea for a friend. But if you like these podcasts, you'll like goldenblack.com. So have a great rest of your weekend, everybody, and thanks for watching and listening.